What's up? Good morning. It's Jays Talk Plus, Blake Murphy and Julia Kreutz, a special Good Friday edition or end of Passover edition, or depending on where your religious allegiances lie, WrestleMania weekend edition. I don't know. A lot going on over the course of the weekend. Julia, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. That was brilliant. Very well done. Thank you for starting the show with such a diversity, really, of range with your audience here.
We have a very diverse weekend ahead. Obviously, there's a Jays game tonight. The City Connect Bomber giveaway for 15,000 people, which, by the way, someone asked me on Twitter, like, what time they should show up. And I was like, I don't know. There will be 30,000 people there, 15,000, 6 o'clock. And then a bunch of people jumped in and be like, no, early. I've been out of the merch collecting game too long.
Yeah, so I am on the road team a lot. I do a lot of coverage for the road team, which means that I get to the ballpark a little bit later at points. And a giveaway like that, say the away team is opening their clubhouse at 4:30, there's already a ton of people lining up by the time that I get there. So I'm very sorry. And this is also a holiday, so I would agree with you. Get there as early as you can.
Well, you're not agreeing with me. I was oblivious to just how early people
even
need to get
better.
There.
I disagree with you.
Yes, that's much, much better. Okay, so it is a 7 o'clock game tonight. As a reminder, it's on Apple TV Plus. We'll give you the instructions for how to watch it on Apple TV Plus a little later. That also means that as part of the broadcast, we get to see our friend Trisha Whitaker, who joins us now. Trisha, good morning. How you doing?
Hi, good morning. I'm great. How are you guys?
Doing well.
Yeah, excellent.
Thank you so much for joining. This is great. How does it feel to be back in Toronto? A little bit of a different weather, I guess, than the first time you were here, right?
Yeah, a little bit different. I feel like I was just here, though. I love Toronto, though. We love coming to Toronto. Everybody's always so friendly. And I got a really beautiful view of the lake and the CN Tower right now from my hotel room. So I'm loving it.
That's great. So you've been here a bunch over the years in your prior role with the Rays and then Apple TV Plus. You've been here twice in quick order. I'm curious, from an outside perspective, someone who comes here just a couple times a year, how are you enjoying the ballpark changes that the Jays have rolled out over the last couple of years?
I love them. I love the ballpark changes. We've done a lot of those on our Apple TV broadcast, but I've always liked the Rogers Center, honestly, even before the ballpark changes. I thought that it's always been such a beautiful, unique ballpark, especially the hotel looking into the outfield. I just think that's so cool. So I love it. They've done a phenomenal job of it. It is a beautiful park, a clean park, and I love it.
Is there anything you like to do while you're in Toronto, Trisha? Obviously, you have been here a ton. Wondering how much you've been able to explore within the city.
Yeah, definitely explored a bit. When we're here for Apple TV, it's a little harder because we are just, it's all work all the time. But, you know, obviously I like to walk and go get coffee. And I've been up in the CN Tower. That view is beautiful. So I haven't had a ton of time this trip to explore, but when I do, I love it.
Trisha, how are you enjoying the move to Apple TV? I know you've been doing the Apple TV Plus games and Friday Night Baseball the last couple of years, but this year, you know, kind of coming off of the Rays beat and focusing on that as your primary, how has that transition been for you?
It's been awesome. I love this Apple TV crew. Obviously, I loved doing the Rays for 6 seasons. It was amazing. Love that organization. Love that team. Loved being in the AL East, but it was time to fully commit to this. And I'm also an aunt. I've got like 9 nieces and nephews, and I wanted more time with them. The Apple schedule plus the Rays schedule was just too much. It was, when you factored in spring training, it was around like, I was doing about 170 games a year. I mean, it was insane. So, but I love it. I love this Apple TV crew. I love going around the country to different ballparks and seeing different teams, and it's been amazing.
And we love watching all the great work that you're putting out. There's so much cool stuff that you get to do in this role, and I do think we need more of that, Trisha. So, it's been really awesome to see you, kind of blossom in that role. But I guess switching back a little bit to, you mentioned that you love the ballpark changes. That's obviously not the only change that we have seen around the Blue Jays. And having been here as much as you have with the Rays and otherwise, this team is certainly different, right, from the Blue Jays that we are seeing, right, or from the Blue Jays that we saw last season. And I'm wondering, from maybe a little more zoomed out perspective, if there's anything that stood out to you in that opening series and now that is significantly different from the Blue Jays identity that we saw last year compared to this one.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think at that point, it's so early in the season, nothing really stood out to me because it was so early. But, there was the distraction of wondering what was going on with Vlad's future. And now that that's over, I think that, that's really, really good for the clubhouse. It's really good for the fans. It's good for the entire organization. But, through the first few weeks of the season for this team, it seems like small ball has kind of been their bread and butter. They've found ways to plate runs. The home runs haven't been coming for them. But they've also, relied on their starting rotation on top of that small ball mentality. So I think that's been really fun to watch. And I think that just watching the way that Vlad has such an influence on that team and this new deal will have such an influence on that team and this city will be really interesting for the rest of the season. And I think the AL East is better when the Blue Jays are better. I remember covering the Blue Jays and the Rays early in my career with the Rays in 2019 and 2020. And you're right, they are not the same team. So I'm excited to see what they can do this year with all of the things that they have.
Tricia, you mentioned within their Vlad's contract situation. Now, I know you spoke to him about it a little bit in March. What was your reaction when the deal comes down? And obviously, we had been told, hey, it's not going to happen once the season starts. And then there were these little like kernels of optimism and now it's done. What was your view, again, from a national perspective as that got across the finish line?
Don't you love those kernels of optimism throughout so much uncertainty? I loved it. I'm a sucker for people who play in the place that they love and that they grew up having such a passion for. So I was, pulling for this long-term deal, I think, from the outside looking in. And like I said before, I think that him signing releases a lot of the distraction that was going on to start the season. Obviously it's a player-friendly deal for him. I'm just happy to see that it happened because I know so many questions were surrounding the Blue Jays organization when this was an uncertain part of it. I remember being here at the beginning of the year for that opening weekend, and people were saying that, a lot of people were fed up with what they were doing as a franchise. And I think signing him kind of silenced a lot of people. I know the next question is Bo. but I love it. I love that Vlad is going to play where he grew up rooting for until he's 40 years old. I just think that's awesome. And it made me really happy to see that come across my phone.
Well, you started on the Rays in 2019.
Yep, I sure did.
So that's the year, Bo came up. How weird is it to even like think of a Blue Jays team without Bo and Vlad on it?
Oh, it'd be so weird. And I think that would be a massive failure. If, at least one of them, I'd say more so Vlad than Bo. But it would be weird to see a Blue Jays team without Bo Bichette because you put those two together. And that would be very strange. So I'm glad they got Vlad done. Maybe Bo is next. But yeah, I mean, you're right. That would be weird. You associate the Blue Jays with Vlad and Bo.
Okay, so on the other side of this one, the Mariners, the last couple of years, they're kind of like the Blue Jays in that the starting pitching is really, really good. And you're kind of like, hey, are they going to hit enough home runs? Are they going to score enough to get going? How much are you looking forward to a pitching matchup tonight between Brian Wu, who's really, really established himself, and one of the better like characters as far as starting pitchers go in baseball and Bowden Francis?
Yeah, he is a character. I can't wait to do some stories on Bowden Francis tonight. That guy has some depth to him, for sure. So I'm excited for that. No, it's gonna be a great matchup. Obviously, you talk about the Mariners and their rotation, and last year they were so dominant. The numbers haven't been up to their usual standards so far this season, but the offense has picked up a lot of the slack lately. Through the first seven games, the Mariners offense wasn't great. But since then, the runs per game has more than doubled in 12 games since that. And I think that's been good to see for the Mariners because that city and that team is pining for some success, especially with that top starting rotation that they had last year. And they do want to get Julio Rodriguez back to the Julio that we knew in 2023. But in terms of this matchup tonight, I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be a great matchup. It's going to be just a great preview of what we could see from these two teams for the rest of the year.
And of course, you know, Trisha, an offense does not hinge on just one guy, but you look at the Mariners offense, the fact that it has picked up, but for it to really take off, really, how important is Julio Rodriguez? And is it as simple as let's just get Julio back to the guy that we once came to know and love?
Oh, yeah, it is important to get him back to the guy that we know and love, right? I love Julio from a personal standpoint. He's always so great to deal with. He's a great face for the game. He's a great personality for the game. So you want to see him do well strictly from, you know, a statistical standpoint and wanting the Mariners hitting to look like it can, but also because he's just a good player for the game. I know this season he's – one of the things we talked about in our production meeting was just him at the plate. He's 1-for-16 with runners in scoring position. That's not characteristic generally of a guy like Julio, who we know can hit the ball better than that. But I do think it is very important for the Mariners for him to be the Julio we used to know, and for the game of baseball in general. And I'm interested to see what will happen with him for the rest of the season at the plate.
Yeah, we need him hitting well enough that we can appreciate those, what was it, Swarovski, like diamond-encrusted cleats that he had for a little bit. That's the kind of swagger we want back from Julio Rodriguez. It can happen after this weekend, though. Yeah, I guess the other one to look out for in this one, Trisha, I don't know how familiar you are with just how much Cal Raleigh kills the Blue Jays and, like, enjoys killing the Blue Jays. I don't know if he'd comment on it, but he has 6 homers here in 8 career games, and then another one in the wild card series the other year. So I guess that's one way Seattle could get it going tonight as well.
It is, and you know what? I hate to say it, but he's kind of been on a tear recently.
Yeah.
He's hit 6 home runs in his last 6 games, so that might be not a great stat for the Blue Jays, especially if he's good at hitting at Rogers Center, but we'll see. I mean, he signed that massive deal, too, and I think he's really, really good for the game as well, and we'll see what he does this weekend.
Yeah, what do you do with a guy like that who's already on a tear and then is known for kind of punishing your team? But these are obviously two teams that, being in the AL East and with just how murky the American League is right now, we've been paying a lot of attention to. I'm also curious, Trisha, again, your role as more of a national reporter being all over and getting to know pretty much every team a little bit better. I'm wondering if there's any team that has surprised you so far and that maybe we're not paying too close attention here and we should.
Well, I'm going to go with the negative surprise and the positive surprise.
Okay.
It surprised me how bad the Braves are. I mean, sometimes I look at the standings when I wake up in the morning, I'm like, how did they get so bad? This is not good. Not good for baseball. You like to see the Braves put together a good season because they've got a good market and a fantastic fan base. So I was surprised at how bad they are. I'm not surprised that the Padres are good. Did I expect them to be this good right out of the gate? I did not. And that's been fun to see. Also, the Cubs. I'm a sucker for the Cubs, though, because I grew up going to Wrigley with my dad when I was little. And, you know, I will never forget when they won the World Series in 2016. They've been good so far this season. So I'm going to go with pay more attention to the Cubs. I kind of view them, in my opinion, many people would probably disagree, but I view them as kind of the darling of baseball. And I would love to see them keep up this pace for the rest of the season.
Trisha, you mentioned you grew up going to Wrigley. I don't know how much you've been there as a reporter now, but I'm wondering just what the feeling is to go back in this role and sort of have those memories and that nostalgia hit you when you get there.
Oh, I cried. I literally cried. I'm not even kidding. Like, and I am very locked in when I get to a baseball field. Like, there's hardly anything you can do to distract me. But we went to Wrigley in 2023 for an Apple TV game. And I had been there to cover the Rays on a regional sports network level. But going to cover a game as a national reporter on national TV, I remember looking up into the nosebleeds. And I remember in high school, me and my mom, we had no money growing up. And we saved up enough money to buy my dad playoff tickets up in the nosebleeds, just me and him.
Wow.
It was like $500 per ticket. I mean, we didn't have any money, but we saved up enough money to buy him playoff tickets. And we went and we sat and watched the game up there. And so I'm just standing on the field, looking up at those seats that we sat in, having this nostalgic moment, thinking, oh my gosh, now I'm like down here, you know, about to interview some of the biggest stars in the game on national TV. It was a full circle, really, really cool moment. And I mean, I cry at State Farm insurance commercials if they're sentimental, so it's not hard to make me cry. But it was really cool. And all of those nostalgic baseball feelings with my dad, you know, kind of came back. And that's why I love this game. And that's why I love doing this on Fridays and talking to you guys about this matchup. So. Wow.
I have chills. Thank you for sharing. That's really awesome.
Yeah, that's a great story. It makes me, my dad is coming here from Newfoundland in a couple weeks, and I'm just hoping for similar reasons that the Leafs are still in the playoffs, because right. Like my dad's a hockey only guy, and Leaf tickets are very expensive even when they're not in the playoffs. But they gotta make like the third round for the timing to work out. So I don't know if we're gonna pull that off. Trish, you mentioned
I hope so.
Yeah, I hope so too.
That's sometimes I feel like what people forget about sports. When we get so into the numbers and the nitty gritty and getting mad at players for not performing, it's like, no, these are memories you're making with people you love in baseball. Like baseball is such a nostalgic sport, and especially between like a daughter and her dad or a son and his dad, it's just so special. I could go on forever about that.
No, it's great. I was at the game with friends on Monday, and we went for beers after. And like the whole time, we're not talking about, like, I'm a stats guy, but we're not talking about stats. It's like, oh, what were you doing during the bat flip game? What were you doing during the Edwin wildcard game? And like sharing what we were all doing for those ones. It's we could do numbers stuff on this show, but the whole reason we love sports so much is about that emotional connection with it. Trisha, thank
100%.
You so much. Thank you so much for doing this. I hope you have a great time. It won't be look up at the stands Cubs level tonight, but it'll be hopefully a good one for you down at Rogers Center.
You guys are going to make me think of that story in the middle of like a live report during the broadcast. You're going to see tears streaming down my face. Yeah. People are going to be like, what is wrong with this girl?
You know what you do? You just look way up top. If you find that happening, you're going to see like Corona rooftop patio, and it'll just like center you enough to like chuckle and be like, okay, I'm emotionally centered again.
This is where I am. Yeah. Cool. Yeah, no, but that was the goal. And I got to say, I will be at the ballpark later, Trisha. And, I'll come to say hi to you by saying, hey, remember when you used to go to Wrigley with your dad?
Please do. I would love it.
Awesome. Thanks, Trisha. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. See you guys.
Trisha Whitaker of Apple TV Plus. It's Friday Night Baseball on Apple TV Plus tonight. So the game is available to watch only on Apple TV Plus. New and returning Apple TV Plus subscribers can access a 2-month free trial of Apple TV Plus at apple.co/MLB gift. You could also just Google how to do this. Please don't DM me asking how to do this again this year. You can find step-by-step instructions on how to watch Friday Night Baseball on MLB.com or Apple Support, or again, just Google it. And as we always remind you, Ben Schulman and Chris LaRue are still on the call on the radio side at Apple TV Plus. While it is a very fun broadcast, Ryan Spielberg's will be on the color commentary, Alex Fausa on play-by-play, and Trisha. You can also have the option on Apple TV Plus to switch to Ben and Chris as the audio feed over the video if you want the home radio broadcast as well.
That's a nice touch.
Yeah.
I didn't know about that feature.
Nobody ever knows about it. That's why I try to let people know. It's awkward because like I like the Apple TV Plus broadcast one.
Yeah,
so like Trisha's awesome. Spielberg's is great.
100%.
But there are some people who like they want the home touch.
The familiar feeling. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm glad that there is that option, honestly.
Yeah.
Something for everybody.
Yeah, it's good. I was going to make a comment about Chris being old. Because it was Chris LaRue's birthday this week is the context for that. Sorry, this is bad radio hosting. Got stuck in the middle of trying to decide whether to make a joke or not. We're going to talk to Angie Mentick of the Mariners broadcast in a little bit here. Yep. But before we take a break and do that, there was some Blue Jays news yesterday that we should touch on. Nathan Lucas had been on the paternity list. Addison Barger got called up to fill that spot. But it was Davis Schneider going back down to AAA Buffalo, not Addison Barger, at least for now. Lucas is expected to rejoin the team today. So a little lefty heavy, but Davis Schneider is going to go down to Buffalo, try to get it going, try to figure it out there. What did you make of that move? And you know, did that catch you off guard yesterday after? Like, I think it came down right after we got off the air.
It did catch me off guard a little bit, but you know, it's just because you don't really necessarily expect something like that to happen on an off day. I was very much, you know, not in baseball mode anymore. That comes up. But at the same time, it's kind of like expected in many ways here, Blake. I understand that the handedness of the hitters, and you look at that bench right now, you're right, it is pretty lefty heavy. But the fact of the matter is that Schneider was not right now an effective option against left-handed hitters. pitchers either. And so you do need to make a decision here and maybe allow someone who has been really, really good for this organization and obviously, you know, came in and did what he did a couple years ago. That is how most people still remember Davis Schneider. He didn't get to any level of consistent success here. And I know that, you know, you mentioned this yesterday at Baseball Town during the event. You think that Schneider is closer than it looks. But I don't know if it's just a matter of needing consistent at-bats, playing every day. He just didn't find the groove again. And that obviously dates back to last season.
Yeah, and look, he did not have a good season last season. There's no way around that. He didn't have good numbers so far this year. I do think there is a component to the team had played 20 games and he had 21 plate appearances.
There you go.
That's probably a little tough. Yes, he was one, and he was 1-for-12 against lefties, which if you're going to be the lefty masher who gets the odd start against a lefty or comes in as a pinch hitter, that's not going to cut it. He did also, though, have 4 walks and a hit by pitch in those 17 plate appearances. So like from an on-base perspective, he was still obviously judging the strike zone pretty well. There were a couple instances where he got hosed on a strike call right at the top of the zone that if he were in AAA, he could tap the helmet, get a review, and he would have won that. He was very, very good at that when he was last in AAA. And there were just like last year, there were times where I thought he looked overmatched, and I thought last year maybe even he'd go down. The at-bats to start this year, I think he just got like, yeah, he did. He wasn't playing well, but I think he was a little unlucky in some points. And he never at any point in that was I like, oh, he doesn't know what he's doing up there. He looks out of touch. I think there is a good argument to be made that, look, he's not young, right? Like he's 26. This isn't a 22-year-old coming up and be like, okay, here's your taste. Go back down to AAA and we'll call you up when you're ready. But I think there is a real value to, you haven't gotten consistent playing time for a good chunk here now. Maybe there's a confidence aspect or something like that. Go down, play every day for a couple weeks, get that stroke back against lefties. And I think he'll be back before long because like, yeah, trade deadline, we'll probably be talking about they need another righty bat who can mash lefties or whatever. Like, I don't think JD Martinez is walking in the door. I don't think Robbie Grossman's coming in. I think those guys would be on the roster if they were going to do that by now. So we'll talk about it in July. But between now and then, they're going to need another righty on the bench. You know, they're going to need someone who can hit left-handed pitching effectively. And I think he'll get another shot at that. He did go 0-for-3 with a walk last night for Buffalo. So, but nobody... Nobody, they got no hit except for Michael Stefanic. He had 3 hits and no one else got one in that game. So maybe just, it's been a bad time for the Buffalo Bisons
in general,
to start this year. Yeah, like they're 4-10 and Jonathan Clase is the only guy that has like good offensive numbers. Rough go down there.
Let me ask you this then. When do you think we will see Clase here? I know that right now you look at the makeup of this roster and maybe we do need someone or the Blue Jays do need someone who is more of an infield guy, maybe a third baseman or something like that on the bench. But Clase has been hitting really well. He has the speed component. He's a switch hitter. Where do you stand on him?
Yeah, the speed component is nice. And I think, you know, when Dalton Varsho comes back, one of the reasons I think you make an argument for Miles Straw to stick on the roster, obviously he's had a hot start, but even if he hadn't, is there's a defensive value and none of, as much as you might like Barger, Roden, Heineman, that type of, even Davis Schneider when he was here, there's not a lot of pinch run value there. And I think in your 13th guy, defensive value is important, yes, but the pinch run value, like if you remember back to the 2015-2016 playoffs, like Dalton Pompey didn't swing a bat, but he comes in and that's so valuable in like micro situations. The thing that would hold me back on Class A a little bit is he's only 22.
Right.
Davis Schneider, Addison Barger, Alan Roden, those guys are a little older where it's like, okay, they need Will Wagner. They need to show you because they don't have a lot of developmental time left. Whereas Class A got kind of rushed to the majors a little bit last year. Didn't have a very good year like at the majors or AAA. Hitting at least when he was in Toronto. So I would buy the argument that there's more developmental upside in him staying down there a little bit, getting everyday reps. And then really, they're just like, they're so outfield heavy that, not that Davis Schneider was ever getting reps at second base with Jimenez in there every day. But yeah, I think they would probably prefer Davis Schneider to be that guy that comes back up. Or if Addison Barger just rakes, then you just say, okay, well, we don't have a lot
of
righties.
That.
And
right.
And yeah, there you go. He hits every ball 140 miles an hour or whatever it is. Okay. that's that for now. So we have an idea of what the roster will look like tonight. Let's take a break. Let's go get to know the Mariners side of this a little bit better. They've got a couple old friends on that team. Rowdy Tellez is on that team. Trent Thornton's on that team. They just signed Zach Pop because they can't quit former Blue Jays relievers. They just love him for years now. Let's check in on them. We'll talk to Angie Mentig on the other side as Jays Talk Plus continues with Blake Murphy and Julia Kreutz.
Big opinions and in-depth conversations covering the Leafs, Jays, Raptors, and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. Blake Murphy and Julia Kreutz with you. Trisha Whitaker last segment mentioned the Arizona Diamondbacks, and I was looking at the MLB standings during the break. They're in fourth in the NL West. They would be first in any other division in baseball.
That's the NL for this, the NL West specifically.
Yeah, usually we feel that way about the AL East, and the AL East does have the second best run differential of any division so far, but damn.
Yeah.
Tough to be in the NL West.
Yeah.
Less so in the AL West, although Texas and Seattle are both off to pretty good starts. Seattle won a wild one yesterday to improve to 10-9 as they get ready to visit Toronto for 3 this weekend. Let's get to know that team a little bit better. Let's talk to Angie Mentig of Root Sports Northwest, former All-American, former pro baseball player. Angie, how are you doing this morning?
I'm good. I'm still, even though we were just in Cincinnati, I still am getting used to East Coast time. I'm struggling with it. I went to bed at 3 o'clock, then 4 o'clock, then 5 a.m., but last night I hit it at 2 a.m. So I'm getting better.
Yeah, and just as you get good at it, it'll be time to leave.
Uh-huh. Go back.
Yeah, that's a tough one. How was that game yesterday? A bit of a crazy one. Seattle blows it in the eighth, and then Cal Raleigh, the hottest hitter in baseball, and Randy Rosarena come through, and then a crazy 10th inning. I guess just kind of pulse of the Mariners right now coming out of that crazy one to get back above 500 before they come in here.
Yeah, that was absolutely bonkers. I mean, the other way too, when Jake Fraley hit the grand slam, and the Mariners bullpen's been really solid, and Vargas, who kind of came in, Carlos Vargas, his walk rate has gone from like 18% to 2 point and change. So this is a guy that didn't walk people, walks the world, and then all of a sudden grand slam, and you're like, eighth inning, bottom of the eighth, grand slam. They're up by 2. Yeah, this doesn't look good with 3 outs. And then all of a sudden, I mean, that's just how special Cal Raleigh's been at the plate, especially in clutch situations. I mean, boom, you make it a 1-run game. And now you're thinking, okay, now you can play for one. Now you can play for one. You got 3 outs, play for one. And then Randy just ties it. And then you're thinking, okay, well, maybe we'll get out of here with a win.
Yeah, it's very nice to see the bats picking up what has been just tremendous pitching from the Mariners, but and good to see, I guess, the offense picking up overall, right, Angie? But this team, yeah, early on, the Mariners did feel like they shared some similarities with the Blue Jays here. Really, really good pitching, difficulty scoring. How do you see, I guess, how this team started in terms of its offense and where it is now, and where the evolution lies, really?
Well, the Mariners pitching has always been really good, particularly their starting pitching, and really has done a great job of keeping them in games. The problem is, I mean, the Mariners were epically bad at striking out, or I should say epically good at striking out. I mean, literally, they set a record last year before the All-Star break. But, you know, with Edgar Martinez and with Kevin Seitzer, it's not that the same things weren't being said. I think they were being said, but sometimes it's just a little different voice and people hear things a little bit differently. And they really are, taking this up the middle of the field approach. And with that, they have really cut down on the strikeouts, and they're finding ways to put them in play. And they're still going to slug mistakes, but they are doing a much better job of putting the ball in play. And they're also, with that approach, you know, where you're not having to make contact so far out in front, you're allowing the ball to travel a little bit further. You're seeing the walks go up because they're seeing the ball a little bit longer. And I also think, and I was talking about it with Jorge Polanco, which is just, he's just torching the ball right now, at least from the left side, because he can't swing right-handed, is, you know, with that approach and you're going up the middle, you really kind of define the edges inside and outside better. So their strike zones, I feel like, getting a lot better, and you're just seeing them put the ball in play more.
It's interesting that you mentioned the Jorge Polanco thing. Yeah, so for anyone who doesn't know, he is a switch hitter who is only now working back his right-handed swing. In your conversations with him, how odd has that been? Like, I imagine he mostly hits lefty anyway because more pitchers are right-handed, but the last time he saw a lefty-on-lefty plate appearance was probably quite a while away.
You guys saw that. Well done. Yeah. You guys saw that. Blake, I'm impressed. Yeah, that was absolutely nuts because it was early in the game and Jorge Polanco, they didn't want to take his bat out of the lineup. So they didn't want to bring in a righty against the lefty. But, you know, that's what Tito was doing. He was trying to basically get Polanco's bat out of the game. And so for the first time in his career, probably since Little League, he went lefty on lefty. And it was kind of ugly, you know. I mean, it went about as you would expect. Yeah. So then, you know, the next game yesterday, the same situation came up, and instead of him batting lefty on lefty, they brought in a right-handed bat. But you know, talking with Polanco, a couple things that he's doing. He says that he's standing in the cage right-handed, even though he's not swinging, just to keep his timing right-handed. And then also he is taking right-handed cuts off of the tee. So he's just not, he's not doing with flips and he's not doing it off of the machine. So he says he's days away.
Okay.
So I don't know if maybe we'll see it in Toronto.
Yeah, Easton Lucas set the start Sunday, so that'd be a lefty that could turn him around. We'll see if we get to see it. Another thing this Mariners offense has been able to do is steal some bases. They're first with 31 stolen bases so far. They're actually first in stolen base attempts as well after being 10th in attempts last year. How much of that is, do you think, like a conscious effort of, hey, the bats aren't always going here. We've struggled to score runs. We got to find more ways to do that. I know it's early, so the answer might just be, I don't know, it's random. They've had more opportunities. But is that a conscious part of what the Mariners are trying to do this year?
I would say that is the second reason. The number one reason, 100% without a doubt, is Eric Young Jr., first base coach, new to the organization. And this dude is picking up everything. I mean, he's like, one look and go, two look and go. I mean, he's looking at the feet. He's looking at your catcher's feet. If your catcher gets in a certain stance on a certain pitch every single time that he calls, and maybe that ball is ended up in the dirt a little bit more, he's picking that up. So he is 100%. And now he's in their ear, of course, you know, every single time with, you know, he's 1.4 to the plate. He's 1.5 to the plate, but it's not just his time to the plate. It is the little things that he is constantly studying about, you know, the little tells that a pitcher gives that lets him know he's going to the plate or maybe he's coming over here. So, Mitch Garver stole a base this year. I mean, come on. Cal's got stolen bases. Yeah. There's only like three dudes on the team that haven't stolen a base. So that tells you, you know, this isn't all about speed. This is about when they decide to go.
I think it's so easy to forget the importance of a first base coach or the coaching staff as a whole, right? When it comes to those little things and acquiring trust and all of that. That's really, really cool to see.
I remember, if you remember Eric Thames, who was very briefly in the Mariners organization, but was also a Blue Jay and then went to Korea and came back with the Brewers and then bounced around. I did a piece on him when he was in Korea because not only did he become like an MVP, but this huge guy who is a home run hitter stole 40 bases in the KBO. And I remember talking to him about it. And Jun Ho, who is like the stolen base king of Korea, was his first base coach.
There
and he
go.
Was just like, I just do what he tells me to do. Basically, like I stand there, I get my lead and he lets me know. So yeah, I think that's an underrated piece of this sometimes.
Yeah, I agree with you, Blake, and Julia, you're spot on too. It's those little things. It's one of my favorite things about this game. I always say it's the little things that add up to the big part of the game. And right now, that's what this Mariners team has been able to do. Listen, I mean, they're not lighting the whole entire world on fire, but you're seeing them change. And, you know, they are doing things like they're taking their walks and they are stealing bases and they are having productive outs. I mean, they were like, you know, 29th last year before, the last month of the season when we kind of had this regime change in productive outs. Like to just, you could get them on, you get over, but they didn't get him in. I mean, they just were not doing sac flies. They were not bunting him over. They were not hitting behind runners. And to your point, Julia, it's I love it. The little things that make up, you know, a big part of the game, because hitting has never been harder than it is right now. And 90 feet is critical in the game right now.
And it's what has, you know, I would imagine big part of what's allowed the Mariners to be above 500 right now without the long ball. And obviously you put the ball in play, good things will happen. I think that's kind of what we're seeing with this team right now.
With the exception of one hitter who is putting the ball in the seats every single game. And I'm terrified. So Cal Raleigh kills the Blue Jays all the time in Toronto, in Seattle. It doesn't really matter. So he has 9 home runs in 18 regular season games against the Blue Jays, 6 in 8 games at Rogers Center. And that's not including his big wild card series that he had as well. Phew. And now, Angie, he comes in here. He's hit 6 home runs in his last 6 games. What's clicking for Cal right now? How scared should the Blue Jays be to catch him on a heater?
Yeah, I mean, and the fact that he did it from both sides of the plate. So, like, usually it's like, oh, left side, he's going well. No. He hit his 100th, you know, in a game where he hit one right-handed and left-handed. He is locked in. And sometimes, you know, you guys have seen this. Guy will sign a big contract, and he's going to be a Mariner for the long time, if not for the rest of his career. And then he lets up. I mean, not Cal. I just adore this kid so much. His family is so kind. We had his mom. We interviewed her in the stands yesterday. Brad Adam went up and chatted with her. And she said at the end of the interview, I just want to thank everybody for loving my son so much. And I'm just like, come on, mom.
Oh, that's so special.
Could we love you guys anymore? But they're just a great family. He's a great kid. And you're just so happy for his success. But yes, you should be terrified, Tanzer.
Have you, I know he spoke about it on his own show the other day. But for anyone who doesn't know, so Cal Raleigh is a switch hitter and torpedo bats are all the rage. He is only using it from one side of the plate because his lefty swing is a little shorter. And I guess he wants the barrel weight distribution that way. And then when he hits from the right side, he wants a shorter bat because his swing's a little longer. Have you spoken to him about that at all? Or you know, obviously torpedo bats are the buzz has worn off. But I do find it fascinating that he's using it from one side of the plate only.
Yeah. He, I think he's playing it with it from the right side as well. He's hitting he's swinging the torpedo bat from the left side, but it is a different bat. You'll see his aqua handle torpedo bat from the left side, but I think it's a different weight on the right side. But I am not saying that he's in love with the torpedo bat from the right side. But yeah, it's kind of interesting. As I'm sure you know, and I'm not exactly sure on your camp, like who's in, who's out. But it's sort of interesting. You know, Julio took a few swings of the torpedo bat and was just like, nope, I don't like it. And, you know, other guys, are really digging it right now. So,
yeah, it's an interesting one. I talked to a few guys about it. And David Schneider, who's now in AAA, was one of the guys who toyed around with it. Vlad, it's like a non-starter because he wants a maple bat and you can't do the torpedo with maple. It hasn't been as big a thing here as it was, obviously, opening weekend in New York and then this weekend with Cal. Angie, want to swing to the pitching side? We're going to see Brian Wu tonight. And I know early in the season, you had a breakdown on why Brian Wu is so hard to hit. For anyone in our audience who did not catch that, why is Brian Wu so hard to hit? Because a couple years into his career here, he looks extremely hard to hit.
Yeah. Yeah, he's fastball. Like he is four seam, two seam, and he's got one of those really funky release points. It's like a full foot lower than the MLB average. So it's like a sprinkler where it kind of shoots up at you. So that's his four seamer. And then his two seamer, you know, just goes in the completely different direction. So he's got this same low release point and you have this pitch doing this at you. And they're two four seamers. And then all of a sudden, you know, he goes to his secondary stuff, which is kind of like a plan B. He doesn't need to use it very often, but you always kind of have that in the back of your head. And he's just really sneaky fast And it's really effortless with him as well. Like Cal Raleigh even made the joke. He's like, is this dude even sweating out there? So I think the ball gets on people much faster than they anticipate. And then just the movement and his ability to replicate with his release on those two fastballs is just, it's tough.
Yeah, when they look exactly the same coming out of the hand and then it's just a completely different movement profile, that's got to be extremely tough for hitters. But obviously that starts with command, right? Or at least it should. And it seems like that's something that he's been doing extremely well also, and not just this season, but last season.
I think it kind of like goes back to he didn't start pitching until really late in life. You guys know those guys that have been a PO pitcher only since they were 11, right? And then you have the other group who, like, they grew up as a shortstop. And Wu's one of those ones that grew up as a shortstop, super athletic. And he doesn't, like, overthink his athleticism. Because I think when you think, you slow down athletically. And Wu just is just real free and easy. And he's a really good fielding pitcher as well. So super athletic out there.
Those guys are fascinating because when you look at, hey, how did a team get this guy in Wu's case in the sixth round? How did Atlanta get Spencer Schwellenbach, who we just saw, you know, later than you'd think when a guy bursts on the scene and has a 3 ERA out of the gate?
Speaking of former shortstops.
It's often these guys that, like, they weren't, you know, we didn't know. Were they going to be a pitcher? Were they going to be a hitter? How much better can you get when you just focus on one? And yeah, to your point about the command, Brian, we had the lowest walk rate in all of baseball last year. 2.8% of batters walked. Pretty ridiculous. Elsewhere on the pitching, Angie, heading into this series, bullpen pretty heavily used the last two games. Obviously, they almost let that one get away. They went to extra innings. I think they used 7 guys yesterday and 4 guys have pitched on consecutive days. How much of a concern would that be for a game like tonight, even though Brian Wu, you know, a good candidate to give them some length?
Yeah, and I think that they, you know, this was a gamble that the Mariners made because you guys were supposed to see Emerson Hancock tonight. That was the way it was supposed to go. They were going to fly Emerson Hancock in, and the idea was, you know, to get into Canada, you know, it's just easier for him to fly in to Cincinnati and then travel with the team versus him going on his own. And then all of a sudden, when he was basically going to be there anyway, they were like, you know, we can actually use, you know, Emerson here and we can push Wu to Toronto. And that was a big thing because Emerson Hancock is a guy that allows a lot of contact and Cincinnati is not a easy place to play when you allow a lot of contact. So this idea was really partly because, and I'm sorry, I'm going back a day before, is Bryce Miller had been talking about a little bit of fatigue. And even though, you know, Bryce and Brian Wu, you know, they've got it some time under their belt, they're still kind of young pitchers. And a big reason why they were so good at the end of last year was because they really, you know, mitigated their innings coming out of the gate. And they feel like they've kind of had a little bit of a workload. So giving Brian Wu this extra day, also they felt like, hey, this is going to help him. Maybe he can go a little bit deeper in the game as well. And just to give these guys a little bit of rest. Logan Gilbert, he's a year more built up, you know, than Brian Wu and Bryce Miller. But still, it never hurts at the beginning of the year to be able to give your starters, you know, that extra day of rest.
Angie, before we let you go, I have to ask you a personal question.
Oh, no.
When you played pro baseball for the Colorado Silver Bullets, is it true that unlimited Coors Light was a part of your contract?
Yes, it was. And the second year, they did not have it in there. And I was like, I'm not signing this thing until you put the Coors Light back in.
So, respect. That's so cool.
Unbelievable. Yeah, that's a great. It's on your Wikipedia page. And I was like, I don't know how reliable this is. I have to ask about it. Yeah, that's a great. It's a great contract.
You know what? So Silver Bullets, when we were barnstorming all over the country, we did a lot of promotions like in bars or in supermarkets, you know, and there were some of the women that did not want to go to the bars. And then there were others of us that were like, I got that one. You guys, You guys hit the supermarket. And so Phil Negro, who is our manager, and Joe Negro were also of the same mindset as me. We called it the library, you know, the I'll see you at the library. And so I spent a lot of time with Phil Negro in the library, and I have bar tricks to last me the rest of my life. So we will, if we ever meet, you know, we'll have some fun.
Awesome.
The library. I'll use that from now on, if you don't mind.
I do. It's all yours, Julia.
Absolutely. Awesome. Angie, thank you so much for doing this. Hopefully catch you again soon.
You guys are fun. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks. Angie Mantic, Root Sports Northwest. Again, former All-American softball player, and then went and played, as I understand it, had a chance to maybe go for the national team on the softball side, but they were beginning this women's pro baseball barnstorming league at the time. And yeah, free, unlimited Coors Light in the contract. That's
That is incredible.
Yeah.
That is incredible.
Dan Tolman, if you are listening, I would like to renegotiate my deal with one new clause in it. I don't care about the brand.
For all the contract talks that we have had over the past few months, this was definitely the most fun one. And it's nice because I don't get to hear that I'm fun all that often. And I think that it is the Blake Murphy effect in my life. I honestly believe that.
I don't think that that's I don't think that that's true. We had fun last night, by the way. Shout out to the people who put Baseball Town together. Julie and I were on a panel at Comedy Bar Bloor with Mitch Bannon and a couple other folks. That was a lot of fun.
It was, this is a pretty chill, the show that we do here, Blake, it is very much like we're just chatting and sipping on our waters and stuff. And that's, I think, what makes it so fun. And
yeah,
good.
Water. That's I'm kidding. It's 11 a.m.
And listen, yesterday was kind of like that too, with a few more people and a beer instead of water. Right. And that's definitely what makes this fun, to be able to just be close to Blue Jays fans and to hear what they're saying and what they want to talk about. I think that's nice as well. Sometimes we can get maybe a little too bogged down in what we're doing and in being with the team and stuff. And when you have a chance to actually connect, whether that's through the text line or the phone line or through an event like this, I always appreciate that chance. I think it's important.
Yeah, and we'll do some text line stuff moving forward on this show. We can't do we can do a phone line, but we have to have people leave a voicemail because of the, like, I know when you do the weekend ones, we can do the call one, and we're doing a couple weekend games next weekend for the Yankees series. But when we're on TV, we can't do the calls because we can't trust you guys to behave yourselves. I'm kidding. There's just a different technical thing. Okay, we got three down at Rogers Center, 7:07 tonight, Bowden Francis against Brian Wu. As a reminder, that is Friday Night Baseball on Apple TV Plus. So you can only watch it on Apple TV Plus, apple.co/MLB gift. For a free trial so that you can check those games out. Google or check out MLB.com or Apple support for how to go through that. And a reminder, yes, you can switch it over to the audio that is Ben Schulman and Chris LaRue on the radio call if you would prefer them. Although, obviously, our friends at Apple TV are pretty great, too. The rest of the series, it's Jose Berríos against Luis Castillo on Saturday, and then Easton Lucas against Logan Gilbert on Sunday. Although there has been some disagreement between what the Mariners have officially listed and what the beat people have said about the order Luis Castillo and Logan Gilbert are going in.
Okay.
So we might have to get some clarification on that
still
down at the park.
Two very, very difficult matchups.
Yeah.
This Mariners rotation is no joke.
It is not. And like, this is happening with George Kirby on the IL.
Yeah.
And George Kirby is apparently having successful bullpen sessions and stuff like that. Once he's back, you go Wu, Castillo, Gilbert, Miller and Kirby. It's got, like, as far as 1 through 5, it's the best rotation in baseball, I think, when all those guys are in there.
Yeah, that's a big statement, but I can't think of any other rotation.
Yeah, I can think of other rotations that you might want. Hey, in a 3-game series, I'll take this one over Seattle's, but if you're going 5 guys deep, they also, like, as a group, just don't walk anyone. Like last year, as a staff for the entire season, they walked fewer than 2 batters per 9 innings, which is unbelievable. Like
that in itself is going to be interesting to watch with the Blue Jays. Blue Jays are not a team that swings and misses all that often, right? But now
number one contact team in the league.
Now you're talking about some truly difficult matchups, and you know you never know if you're going to get that identity or if it's going to be so uncomfortable that they're going to get out of their swings a little bit. So that's something that I'll be watching for here.
Yeah, we'll see. And Brian Wu's pretty good at getting bad looking swings because, as Angie laid out, the four seamer and the two seamer apparently look a lot alike until one comes in at you as a righty. We'll see. The Jays do not have a lot of experience against Brian Wu. The Mariners do not have a lot of experience against Bowden Francis. So fresh slate tonight. It'll be fun down at the ballpark. Thanks to Tricia Whitaker and Angie Mentick for joining us. Thanks to Amit Mann, Austin Mackey, and Jennifer Rolnick behind the glass. Have a great weekend, everyone. We'll talk to you on Monday to break it all down.